the 18th Annual Homelessness Marathon Broadcast, a national town hall discussion on poverty and homelessness in America.
I think it would be pretty startling for the majority of the public to know that within about two blocks from the White House itself, there are homeless people sleeping in parks.
This year, we'll be live from the streets of Washington, D.C. That's the Homelessness Marathon Broadcast, coming to you soon and heard right here on this radio station.
This station is KBOO Portland. Hear the Homelessness Marathon live beginning at 5 p.m. Wednesday, February 17th, and continuing until 6 a.m. Thursday morning.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Monday, February 8th, day before Mardi Gras Carnival 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We have Jonathan Thompson on today. He is the senior editor at High Country News. The most recent issue coming out tomorrow of High Country News is all about the Sagebrush Insurrection. If you don't know what that is, Google High Country News, take a look at that, go ahead and get the magazine, get your hands on that, and read up, because this is pretty stunning. The number of different articles in the as well as the cover story by Jonathan Thompson, and it covers everything from the original Sagebrush Rebellion, which was the spark that set much of this madness off, and takes us right up to the present, where we see sheriffs. Sheriff standing by while the so-called militias roar past them. We're going to keep trying. Jonathan's not ready for us yet, quite yet, but we're going to keep trying to get him on the line. The story is essentially, in a nutshell, when law enforcement joins lawbreakers and both sides are armed to the teeth. Question, where does that leave citizen conservationists just attempting to protect what's left of the West, such as, for example, Nancy Fernandez, another guest that we're going to have on this week. She is with the Lewis and Clark Historic Park, and she is getting people involved in monitoring the huge changes in climate. Farmers don't know. We used to be able to count on the seasons. The Farmer's Almanac, for example, was a pretty good assessment of what the future might hold. Also, of course, Home Watcher Society puts out very good calendars for farmers of planting times and such. None of that's out the window now. No, we can't count on anything. We really don't know what's going to happen. It leaves everyone basically flying blind through the earth. The project that Nancy Fernandez is involved with is Project Rosebud. It's National Park Service partnering with citizen scientists to track when plant species flower, leaf out, or set seed. The way plants grow gives clues to changes in the environment and the impact of climate change. Moving right along, Indian Point nuclear facility operators are telling us that there are alarming levels of radioactivity in the plant's groundwater. Some wells have increased, get this, wait for it, 65,000%. That's 1,000, not 65%, not an increase of radioactivity 65%. This is 65,000%. The nuclear plant is roughly 35 miles north of New York City. And this stuff is, it's in the groundwater, the upstate Indian Point nuclear power plant. Governor Cuomo said the plant's operator, Entergy, reported this. Cuomo also said that he was informed of the tritium contaminated water leak Friday and asked the department, the DEQ and the Department of Health, for, take a look at the incident. How about just stopping it? How much more looking do we need to do before somebody puts a lid on this? And now, because I really don't like devoting any more airtime to Malheur's own insane clown posse, we want to offer you a fill-in-the-blank. Last Friday at... this is the blank right here, okay. Last Friday at Lavoie Finnicum's funeral, Cliven Bundy said... we know what he said. You can go ahead and fill in the blank yourself. He essentially, grazing contracts were a bone of contention. They of course contend that any of this is does not pertain to them. They are exceptional, and therefore they don't need to abide by laws that apply to all the rest of us. And the hope of restoring wild salmon runs above Grand Coulee Dam has been a dream for a long time amongst First Nations. Well, that dream, in fact, moved a step closer to reality. A decision is pending right now to proceed with an initial study on the issue. Salmon runs on the upper Columbia River and its tributaries were blocked by a Grand Coulee Dam built in the 30s, a great flaw, and by Chief Joseph Dem. Get this, get on. They have the gall, they have the arrogance to name a dam on a river that is not only of economic but of sacred, holy importance to First Nations. They named this dam Chief Joseph. What? Who thought that up? What were they thinking? Was this some kind of honor, or is this just sheer sarcasm? It was built downstream in the 1950s. Both were built without fish ladders, and killed a 10,000-year-old Native American fishery. So, and moving right along, at some point here, we're going to try to put on a bit of music because we need to find, we're looking for Jonathan Thompson of High Country News. And that said, we'll bring up our theme again and see if we can verify the contact information for Mr. Thompson. So, well, we'll be putting up some music in a bit to while we wait for Jonathan Thompson to come on the line. And some Northwest Indian tribes in the next 20 years want to achieve a long-held dream. And to that end, the Grand Coulee Dam is once again in play. The cost of doing something like this is not as expensive as apparently that they thought. The Upper Columbia United Tribes is taking a lead in the effort, and the decision on whether to proceed with the initial study is expected this spring. That's soon. Not too bad. It's still, salmon runs on the Upper Columbia and its tributaries are in increasing jeopardy. Salmon have cultural and religious significance, of course, to Northwest Indian tribes. And the runs on the Upper Columbia River used to be, back in the day, they used to be huge. Five tribes in the region have banded together in the effort to restore those runs. They're the Spokane, the Coeur d'Alene, the Kalispell, the Kootenai and Colville tribes. The goal is to conclude all the required studies within 5 years and have salmon spawning above Grand Coulee in 20 years. That is indeed within the lifetime of many of the people who are fighting for this. How often do we see that happen? Not much. Grand Coulee Dam is, of course, the largest hydropower producer in the nation. Images, the iconic images of the thing proliferated in every variety of print media for a very long time. It's even starred in movies with CGI cracks emanating from it. Killing the salmon runs was a tragic and historical wrong that was done to Native people. He is the executive director of the United Tribes. And restoring those runs is restoring a huge... It doesn't completely right wrongs, because you can't do that. All of those years, it's the 50s, have created... It is a very... very tragic situation for a number of those tribes, members of those tribes, whose, as they say, customary and traditional fishing sites were obliterated. Now, bringing that back, we've got Jonathan Thompson on the line. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
We're so glad to have you on. So, what we talked about, what I was reading about, was this incident with Sheriff Eldridge and County Commissioner Phil Lyman. If you want to just take us through that and briefly, and then talk about what that actually means. This is not an isolated incident. These incidents are beginning to emerge all across the West, and there is what can be done when you have a sheriff and a county commissioner who are on the same side. Would you just take us through that a bit?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. It's not an isolated incident at all, actually. In this case, what happened is a county commissioner, Phil Lyman, in San Juan County, Utah, decided, based on input from the community and that sort of thing, they were pretty mad at the federal government, which manages a great deal of land. I think about 80% of their county, perhaps, is federally owned. And they were upset about just the way that the feds had managed their land. So they decided to hold a protest. And that protest would include riding motorized vehicles down a canyon that had been closed to motorized vehicles by the Bureau of Land Management. And so, in other words, they were going to break the law to make a political point. And Phil Lyman, he put this out there. He invited people from all over the state and all over the place, really, to join this protest. And it so happened that it... the date that he planned for it happened to be about a week after the Clive and Bundy affair, where this rancher had been violating the law for many years, and then ended up standing off with the BLM with guns and that sort of thing. But that's a whole other issue. But so that brought in a bunch of people to this protest. Including a lot of the people who are at this Bundy Ranch with guns. And so they went ahead and rode down the canyon, but one of the things that happened before they rode down is that the sheriff, they kind of got the sheriff on board. And the sheriff there is of the same political stripe as Phil Lyman. He has a history of kind of defying the feds as well. And so he got a bunch of deputies down there, and... they never really said explicitly that this was their purpose, but it sure did seem like their purpose was not to arrest the protesters who were breaking the law, but to actually protect them from the federal law enforcement agents. So it was pretty interesting.
So basically, the sheriff and the county commissioner on the same side, and the next level up, the only thing that the only law enforcement agency that would be able to take on these two crazed people would be the feds, and they did nothing. Why are the... I mean, we know they don't want to have anything like Waco or Ruby Ridge happen. What does that leave them as far as their arsenal? And we have just a couple, we have just about 30 seconds left. So we'd like it, I'd like it to invite you back tomorrow, same time, same place, to take up this this game, because this is, this, of course, when HCN comes out. But what's the next level of law enforcement that would take on these people, and why haven't they done anything? This is everywhere now.
Yeah. Well, the next level is the federal government, of course, and they, you know, in most cases they have not done much. In this case, they later did prosecute Phil Lyman, although certainly not the sheriff or anything like that. But it is a good question. Why have they not done more? For example, with Clive and Bundy, we really don't know.
On that note, we have to go. I'd like to have you back tomorrow, and we want to talk a lot more about this. It's a serious problem, very serious, and the implications are really dreadful to contemplate. Thank you so much for being with us today. We've had on Jonathan Thompson. He's a senior editor at High Country News, and the latest issue comes out tomorrow. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, February 8th, 2016. Engineering for us today is Patsy Kerman, and tomorrow we're going to try and have Jonathan back to finish the conversation. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.